the third pick in the 2015 NFL Draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select Dante Fowler, Jr., defensive end, Florida.
I'm excited about this guy. I mean, you know what? His personality and his spirit and the way he plays the game, it'll match a personality of our defense. You know, plays hard in practice, plays hard in games. Football is extremely important to him, and that's the kind of mentality you need.
I think we made the team happy. I think this is a young guy that, you know, defensively we can build around. He offers us a lot of flexibility.
I love what they did with the stadium and, you know, the new scoreboards and everything like that. Jacksonville is a great place. I love it.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Glad you're with us. Jaguars Today. We're back live down at Everbank. Tony, it's like we never left, cozy confines down here as we get ready to talk Jaguar football for the next couple of hours. You heard Dante Fowler Jr. right there in the opening. Jacksonville is ready to love you back, Dante. Give us good reason to do that this year. He's got some new teammates. Well, forever, it's new to him, right? Anybody who he plays with this year will be new to him in that regard. But some new guys to the team, Tony, and some guys hopefully having a bigger impact, like Cindric Marks coming back and being more fully recovered from injury this year, and which kind of goes along with the newness with our question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Today, asking you, now that, you know, the major signings have happened in free agency, doesn't mean the Jags still won't maybe sign a few guys here and there along the way, but the major signings are done. Malik Jackson, Tashaun Gibson, Prince Amukamara, Chris Ivory, Kelvin Beachum, I think are the five most significant ones for this football team. And certainly, look, you don't want your punter to stink, but I don't think people think that that's the most critical move that they made this offseason. Or Mackenzie Bernado as an interior offensive lineman depth piece, not the most important piece necessarily. They're all important to some degree or another, but which one will be the most impactful for the Jags this year? I think it's easy for a lot of people to say, well, it better be Malik Jackson. You got $90 million or potentially $90 million. That's true. And maybe you feel that way, and that's your prerogative, but that's what we're looking for today. Maybe it's Tashaun Gibson. Maybe it's Prince Amukamara. Whomever you think it is, among the free agent signings that the Jags have in the fold so far, tell us which one will have the biggest impact on this football team in 2016 and why you think that. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, as well as the Jaguars Today Facebook page, which is always open for business. Some interesting news. Jeff was mentioning fantasy off the top, Tony. All of a sudden, everyone's going to go cuckoo for Alfred Morris this year as the Dallas Cowboys signed him to a two-year contract. He's gotten statistically worse basically every season he's been in the league. But you put him behind the Cowboys' offensive line for the next couple of years, and all of a sudden people are going to be questioning whether he's a first-round pick in fantasy this year.
Sure, and I think from a Jaguars perspective, with Alfred Morris signing in Dallas, it may, I'm not saying it necessarily does, but it may take that wild card of Ezekiel Elliott going in the top five out, where Dallas was the team that was most connected to that storyline. They've re-signed Lance Dunbar for a year now. They brought in Alfred Morris for 2 years. Darren McFadden
still
was
there.
effective for them last year in that running game. Doesn't mean they won't do it, but it certainly seems less likely with three guys they like in that backfield now that they would be taking a running back in the top five.
Yeah, and I don't know if that was ever something that was a more than just a logical or educated guess kind of connection. I don't know if there was ever any intelligence that indicated the Cowboys were going to go running back that high when typically we don't see running backs do that anymore. We did see Gurley go 10th overall last year. I could see Philadelphia at 8 or the Giants at 10 still being a stopping point there for Ezekiel Elliott, but I think they need an impact on the defensive side of the football, and I think Bosa or Jack is going to suit the bill for them. The question is which they'll prefer, and will they have a choice of them, which
right.
means that the Jags will have one of those guys left over. I liked hearing Greg Cosell on with Jeff this morning predicting that two quarterbacks ultimately will go in the top five, and maybe Dallas will be a team that pulls the trigger on a quarterback. We just don't know how highly these teams will grade this particular pair in Carson Wentz and Jared Goff, Goff and Wentz, however you want to say it. But they clearly have separated themselves in the eyes of the scouting community. A wide gap, I think it's fair to say, between them and whoever the next guy is, Paxton Lynch, Christian Hackenberg, you name your guy. I think those are seen as two guys that shouldn't be surprised if either one goes in the top five. So you probably shouldn't be shocked then if both of them do. And I think that's the dream scenario for the Jags.
Oh, yeah. Any two non-defensive players going in the top four is what the Jaguars kind of need, from our perspective at least right now, because that means one of those three guys that we've been talking about a lot will be available to him, because two non-defensive guys went in that range. How that's going to happen, who knows? It certainly feels like Laremy Tunsil's going number one.
Right.
That's the way it feels right now, and if Cleveland goes quarterback number two,
you're okay.
You're okay.
But if then Dallas goes quarterback at four, then you've got choices at that point in time. Then, instead of just by default, you're left with maybe one of the three guys that we think fits best. You can actually pull the trigger on a guy you may have, you know, closer to the top of your board than getting somebody else's leftovers at that point in time. So share your thoughts with us today on Twitter, on Facebook. You can join us as well on the phone lines at 641-1010. That's also the number of the 1010XL text line driven by Duval Ford. Oh, first time out of my mouth. I'm sure I won't forget how that goes at any point going forward. But if you'd like to text us on the 1010XL text line driven by Duval Ford, you can do that at 641-1010, and we'll get your feedback that way as well. Ryan O'Halloran coming up in about 20 minutes. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you talking Jaguar football for the next 2 hours. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
We could pick today at number five, yeah, but there's still a lot more information. We're bringing guys in for visits in the month of April, and then a lot more in terms of medical information and workouts that we're still trying to get.
Heck, Tony, I could pick today at number five. Of course, what Dave Caldwell is indicating there, and that was Dave Caldwell yesterday speaking at the owners' meetings down in Boca Raton, is that they know who their top five players are, and at the moment they know what order they rank them in. In other words, we're ready to go. If the fifth pick came up, doesn't matter what four go ahead of us. We have our top five guys, and we're prepared to go to battle with that. Now, it was interesting to me, at least, that he said, I guess he's keeping his options open, but we could certainly entertain a trade back. Okay, understandable. But we could also maybe trade up. And I'm not trying to read too much into that. Like, he is suggesting he's more likely than ever to trade up. I think he's just saying, we can do anything. You know, why say we're not going to do this if the right deal came along and we really love the number two or three guy on our board, and he's sitting there at three, and we don't think he's getting past four, whomever that may be. Maybe it's Ramsey. Maybe it's Bosa. We keep focusing on Jack. May not be him, right? It could be anybody. It could be DeForest Buckner. We just don't know. And if they don't think he's going to get to him, maybe they consider something. I think it's extremely unlikely that they would do that. I think it's just Dave being Dave and keeping his options open.
Yeah, in all likelihood, yes. But the scenario we've been talking about where, say it is Tunsil that goes number one, because it just feels like it's unlikely that it's anything else unless somebody trades that spot.
All right.
So say Tunsil goes number one and Cleveland does go like Jalen Ramsey.
Okay.
Right? So now the Jags are sitting at five. They've decided that maybe they don't like Bosa. Right, maybe they just don't like Bosa. They don't like the fit that he is here in Jacksonville, and that's what you're potentially looking at falling to you at that point. You have no control over it. Obviously, there's two more picks between you and that spot, but you really love Jack, or you really love somebody. Can you potentially then say, all right, what do we have to do to get to three so that we get a player that we really, really love in this draft as opposed to drafting a guy we like? In Joey
right.
Bosa.
And if it's as simple as throwing in, I say simple, you know, nobody likes to give up draft picks, but if it's as simple as throwing in a, you know, like one mid-round pick, I'm not talking about a high third rounder here, something beyond that, and you secure the guy you want, maybe under that scenario, San Diego's sitting there and they're hoping that Jalen Ramsey comes to them. Cleveland takes him right in front of him. So maybe they say, you know what, we like DeForest Buckner a lot. We don't think the Cowboys are going to take him, right? You're right. We think we can get the guy we like with the fifth pick in the draft. Why not get to? I've never understood why teams demand so much extra compensation in some of these circumstances for a one or two spot move when you really feel like you're going to get your guy anyway. Now, I guess they feel like we can't be 100% sure, and we don't know 100% who that other team is moving up for. So I guess if you're moving back a couple of spots, if you're San Diego, you got to have three guys you feel really good about because you can't control it from that point on which way it's going to go. But I still think it's
unlikely.
Very unlikely.
Yeah.
At this point in time that they will move back. Ryan O'Halloran coming up in about 10, 15 minutes. We'll check in on the latest from the owners' meetings, find out what he expects Shad Khan to address, among other things, at the top of the hour. Fan feedback question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships is this. Which of the Jaguars' 2016 free agent signings will have the biggest on-field impact for the team this season? You were just looking at something that was pretty amusing that the Cleveland Browns put out there. Was it the Plain Dealer who put together this bracket of Cleveland sports greatness?
It's Cleveland.com.
Okay, Cleveland.com. So yeah. Is that the Plain Dealer's
site? I believe
site?
So.
Okay,
yes.
So that's the official, you know, the newspaper of record, so to speak, in the city of Cleveland. And they've done an all-time Cleveland sports bracket in
yeah.
honor of March Madness.
Yeah,
we do
March.
Those kind of things all the time. And so they have a Browns division, they have an Indians division, a Cavaliers division, and an Ohio State Buckeyes
yes.
division, even though the Ohio State Buckeyes play in Columbus
correct.
And not Cleveland.
But they don't have the fourth. So they had to figure out something, so they went with the Buckeyes.
Who would they go with in that that point in time? Wild card, maybe.
Right.
I don't know. But all right, so they went with the
just
Buckeyes.
Just guys that were born in Cleveland?
Right.
Have there
maybe,
been 16
maybe.
Of them?
I don't know. I don't know. Or maybe guys that have passed through over the years, the overflow division, whatever. So you got the Buckeyes. That's fine. They can do whatever they like. Tell me about the matchup that you were just discussing, because you got to figure right now, you got to say, LeBron James, obviously.
Yeah, it's LeBron versus Jim Brown.
Right, LeBron, Jim Brown, and for the Indians, maybe Bob Feller.
Feller was the one.
Was he the one seed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Feller was the one, and Tomey was the two.
Tomey was the two. That's interesting. Was Archie Griffin the one seed at Ohio State?
I didn't even look at Ohio State.
Two-time Heisman winner.
Yeah.
I would imagine he would be the number one overall seed in the Ohio State division. All right, so Jim Brown, LeBron, guys like that are going to cruise to victory in the opening round, right? Because ones don't lose to 16, Stoney.
No, but Cleveland.com decided to get a little bit cute with their first-round matchup. Right, so they got to have 16 players in this thing. And
can you name 16 Browns that were any good?
When I give you some of the matchups, the 8-9, Brian Sipe, their all-time leading passer against Clay Matthews. Okay, Ozzie Newsome versus Frank Minifield in the 4-13.
Okay, those are good players.
Yeah,
though. Yeah.
You got Hanford Dixon versus Bill Willis.
Not sure about Bill Willis.
In the 5-12.
I've heard of Hanford Dixon.
The 2-15 is Bernie Kosar versus Tim Couch.
Now Bernie's the 2 seed. You're telling
two
me
2 seed.
Wow.
Bernie's
the 2 seed. You know, they won championships back in the day.
I know.
Well, Jim Brown couldn't have been the only good player on those teams, right? So it was
probably
Kosar,
with Hanford Dixon or Bill Willis.
Tim Couch? Tim Couch is the 15 seed?
Tim Couch.
That's ridiculous.
Makes
now.
The bracket.
Did Ernest Biner and Kevin Mack make the list
I
at all?
I have not seen them. The 7-10. Lou Groza versus Phil Dawson.
The toe.
Yep.
A couple of kickers battling it out there.
The 3-14 is Otto Graham and Joe Hayden. And the 6-11 is Joe Thomas, Marion Motley. You may have noticed I have not mentioned the 1-16 yet. We all know who the 1 seed is.
Oh, the 1 seed's Jim Brown.
The 1 seed is Jim Brown.
He's going to cruise to victory in this one.
But like I said, they decided to get cute with the 1-16 matchup and put in Johnny Manziel.
What?
As the 16 seed all-time in Cleveland Browns history.
Well, that makes it even more of an easy path for Jim Brown, does it not, to the round of
32? I would think so. Okay, the total votes in any matchup outside of Brown and Manziel, which we'll get to the results of that in a moment, the most votes they had on anything else was 3,500.
All right, so they're trying to draw people to the website. 3,500 people, not that high a volume.
No, but they got 11,000 votes.
Oh, for the 1-16 matchup.
In the Manziel-Jim Brown matchup.
Clearly people are turning out because they understand this is so lopsided, we have to vote for the greatest of all time, Jim Brown. Is that what happened?
And Johnny Manziel wins.
What?
With 68% of the vote.
America.
7,500 to 3,500.
Oh, America is trolling Cleveland.com hard. Now, do they go in there?
What is the point of having...
At this point, do you just pull it down? I mean, really, why did you put Manziel in this? And And talk about your factory of sadness, man. I mean, this is just pathetic. Do you pull the poll down now if you're Cleveland.com?
I would be tempted.
You cannot go on with Johnny Manziel knocking out Jim Brown. Jim Brown is eliminated from the best athletes in Cleveland sports history poll after round one. I get it. Upsets happen in the NCAA tournament. 16 is yet to be to one. Manziel over Jim Brown. Yeah. It's not Browns fans voting.
Yeah. Here. No such shenanigans on the basketball side, as LeBron James got 88% of the vote.
How many people voted for that, for a LeBron James matchup?
2,000.
So not that many.
No.
It's interesting, though. You said like 3,500 for the – so more people were coming in just to vote for the football, it seems
yeah.
like.
Well, let me check out the Buckeyes bracket, see what kind of results they
got.
Yeah,
do tell. Archie Griffin's got to be the one seed in the Buckeye bracket right there.
See here, Archie is the one against Anzi Katzenmoyer, and he won with 95% of the vote with only 860 votes.
Katzenmoyer is a hell of a college player.
Yeah.
Didn't do much in the pros.
Yeah. So they got less than 1,000 votes, basically, in the Ohio State bracket, compared to 11,000.
Seeing as how they're not a Cleveland sports team, that's a little understandable, I suppose. So, wow, Manziel over, what would the, I know what the equivalent would be.
Never mind. I know, yeah.
I'm not even going
to. That's like a joke just to put it in there.
No, not even going to go what could be the possible matchups for the Jags. So, who would, number one seed for the Jags, would it have to be Boselli? I think if we did it locally, we'd say Boselli, right?
Probably.
I think so. I mean, I think he's the most Hall of Fame.
I mean, it depends
ready.
On if you wanted to get, again, cute with it, not to put in the name that we were just teasing that you might put in there. But if you wanted to put, like, Burnell as the one seed against Garrard as the 16.
Right.
Right, or something like that. So it would be, here's the quarterbacks. Basically decide who the quarterbacks are, if you wanted it to be Bortles, whatever. If you wanted to just put the quarterbacks there so you have one quarterback going forward.
Well, couldn't you do have the effective impact with Boselli v. Jokel? Is that not the equivalent matchup that
somehow,
we're talking
about? But if you wanted
is
to
that
do,
as
like,
close to a Jim Brown, Manziel as we
Yeah, that would be that
got?
Kind of thing. But is Leon Searcy one of the top 16? Maybe. Right?
Possibly.
So
right.
If you went Boselli-Searcy, Searcy's not going to win that matchup.
Right.
But it's,
sorry, Leon.
This is a guy who may belong in the bracket, but he shouldn't beat the number one seed.
Interesting. All right. Well, they,
it's definitely not Manziel.
They're trolling him hard. So you got to check that now to see if they take this thing down, or will they actually carry on with Manziel, who now you know will win it. It's going to be Manziel will sweep us. If he's going to beat Jim Brown, although people probably get bored of it after that, right? Maybe we had him beat Jim Brown.
Yeah.
Ha ha.
Who cares now?
Right. At this point, we've ruined the fun of Cleveland.com. Ryan O'Halloran, Florida Times Union, coming up in just a couple of minutes. We'll go live to Boca. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, glad you're with us here, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, in Jacksonville at Everbank Field. Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union is in Boca Raton covering the owners' meetings, the National Football League owners' meetings for the Florida Times Union and for Jaguars Today as well. And he joins us here on the radio this morning. Good morning, Ryan. How you doing, buddy?
Good, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. I guess you had some quality time, you and your cohorts, over an hour of it with Gus Bradley this morning. Why did it go on so long, Ryan? I mean, what was the kind of the tenor of the questioning with the head coach?
Well, I'll just give you some background. This morning was every AFC coach gets their own round table and a big ballroom, and the clock starts at an hour. So usually as a local guy, you stay with your coach for half hour or so, get your needed, and then you bounce around. So Gus was asked 114 questions in the hour. I lasted about 62 questions before I moved on to some other guys. But I taped the whole thing, so you'll be seeing that. But I think that the tenor of it was, okay, this is the first time that we've talked to Gus since they signed 7 free. Okay, what'd you like about these guys? How do they fit into what you're doing? And also looking ahead, okay, now that these free agents are in place, what's left to do? What kind of flexibility does this give you on draft weekend?
Yeah, and I think with a lot of the free agents they brought in, it's pretty clear what the plan was, why this guy was brought in. The big questions remain about what is Kelvin Beachum going to be here in Jacksonville, and these last couple days have been the first opportunity to really talk to Dave and Gus about those kind of questions. Where do they see Kelvin Beachum fitting in? Is he competing for the left tackle spot like we thought he would be?
Well, after the last 2 days, I get the sense that it's his job to lose, and I would be stunned if he's not the week one left tackle. You don't sign a guy to have him maybe win the job, and knowing he's going to get a late start. Talking to a couple of Pittsburgh media members, I floated the idea of playing, moving him to guard, and they said he was adamant that he would never do that. He feels he's a tackle in this league, and I'm sure that conversation happened in Jacksonville. So, I mean, what I get from the Beecham thing is left tackle was, I mean, for Jokel, I don't think he's a guard. You know, maybe he has some value to some other team, but what I asked Gus is, okay, what do you feel Brandon Linder's best position is? Well, center or guard? Well, that doesn't really answer the question, but what I got was they feel they want some stability at center. They feel he's their best lineman, so put him there. They haven't decided whether it's right or left guard for AJ Khan, so for Khan. So there's still some moving parts in terms of this offensive line, but, you know, the company line this week has been, well, at least they have some options.
Now, before we go any further, an unimportant question. Can Khan, okay, I'm not going to let Dave Caldwell suck me back into this, right?
AJ said it's Can.
AJ said Can. Caldwell calls him AJ Khan, and I'm not going to get sucked back into this, Ryan. So
just leave it at AJ.
And stick with it.
Yeah, let's leave it at AJ.
That's perfect. They would call him AJ, exactly. Do you think Beecham, what's the timetable that they expect him to be ready to compete? Because like you said, he's got to have time, you know, to show them that he's healthy enough and, you know, fit in with the rest of the offensive line to truly have an opportunity to win that. They may feel like if he's healthy, they've seen enough tape, he's the better player. But what is the timetable as you understand it?
Well, like you just said it right there. They've seen enough. They feel they know enough that if he's able, they think he's going to be the guy. That's my guess. As far as when he's going to be on the field, they did give a pretty clear timetable, you know, early in training camp. So let's say first week of August, that would be 9 months after the surgery. And so the clock is then ticking. If he gets on the field, two preseason games, they want that lineup set for that third preseason game. So, yeah, that's why for them to call it a competition, I think, is a little misleading, because if it's really a true open best man win, blah, 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 then at that point, Luke Jokel may look better, but they may feel that Beecham, because he's the one they signed, that he's going to be the guy in week one.
All right, so I take it, Ryan, as we talk with Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union, just in your comments, you don't think Jokel is necessarily cut out to play guard. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, and correct me if I'm wrong.
I think he's too tall.
You're probably right. You don't see too many. What is he, 6'6"? I mean, you don't see too many guards in that range. But my question to you is then, his fifth-year option, I think the deadline for picking that up is May 3rd, if I'm not mistaken. Do you think that's off the table then for the Jags? If you think, in your mind, you see them having replaced him, in effect, signing Beecham. He's still under contract for this year regardless. I don't see them moving on from him now, because I think you need that insurance. You can't be sure Beecham's going to come back 100%. But in terms of the fifth-year option being picked up, do you think that's not going to happen?
I'd be surprised, because all it takes is, you know, an injury to guarantee that big salary for 2017. And if, you know, let's say, I'm throwing out hypotheticals here, is let's say Beecham comes back the first week of the preseason, shows he's ready to go, and a couple other teams have left tackle issues. I think a guy like Luke Jokel would have value. But with that fifth-year option having been picked up, does the team really want to trade for him? I would guess probably not to be on the hook for that right away. So I think it's smart business for the Jaguars after the draft to not pick it up.
On the other side of the ball, defensively, the Jags obviously brought in Malik Jackson. The conversation, it felt like, throughout the season would come up every now and then about what exactly was the plan for Dante Fowler Jr. It sounds like he's rearing to go and ready for OTAs when they're going to get started here over the course of the next couple of months. But does it still sound like the Jaguars want to use him as kind of that moving piece, or is he basically just going to be that hand-on-the-ground Leo that he was drafted to be?
Well, I got some guts today, because I asked him that, Tony, is they're going to stick with him at Leo until he at least gets some of those reps underneath him at an NFL level, and that's understandable, because the way they see it is on third down, they want Jackson and Marks to be their interior guys. You know, that could, you know, if you play a ton of third downs, a ton of nickel in a game, I'm sure Dante has that ability. But it's almost like right now is they can't concentrate on this position, once we get you settled there, we'll start adding more layers to the playbook for you.
Ryan O'Halloran, Florida Times Union here with us. Ryan, today our question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships is which of the Jags free agent signings that they've signed this year will have the biggest on-the-field impact? And I think you certainly can eliminate a couple at the low end, but I think you can make a case for Gibson. You can make a case for Malik Jackson, even a Mukamara. You can make a case for Ivory and Beecham. So for you, who tops that list, regardless if they got the most money or not, who has the biggest on-the-field impact for this football team?
Well, I'm going to put Gibson at the top of that list. I think he's the most important free agent signing because you look at Malik Jackson, sort of kind of a luxury to have an extra three technique of his caliber. This free safety position with the Jaguars has been a black hole and pretty much a debacle for the last 3 years. If Gibson can come in and shows that he can play sideline to sideline like they think he can, that allows them to put whoever starts that strong safety closer to the line of scrimmage. That helps your run game, run defense. Gets the team into more passing situations. So, and also with Gibson, I think he's a little bit of a riverboat gambler. He's got 14 picks in his career. You got to take some chances to do that. So I think if Gibson has a big impact and plays well right away, it'll have a ripple effect throughout the defense.
What would you say to a Jag fan who says, well, it's got to be Malik Jackson. You paid the guy potentially $90 million over the life of this contract. Would you just say, hey, that's just the nature of doing business in free agency. Guys are going to get overpaid in the NFL.
Yeah, and, you know, if Derek Marks was if it was this time last year and Derek Marks had just torn his ACL, then I'd say, okay, it's got to be Jackson. He has to make the biggest impact. But, you know, they have a little bit more depth at position. If Malik Jackson doesn't have a great season, we can say, okay, maybe Derek Marks steps up. If Tayshawn Gibson doesn't work out at free safety, this team is up the creek.
Yeah, and look, they bring in Malik Jackson. That's really all they did to improve that defensive line, which was a priority coming into this offseason. Maybe they can get something done in the draft, but it'll be a situation similar to what we were just talking about with Dante Fowler, where now you're asking another guy to basically just get his feet wet in the NFL. Did you get any sense talking to Dave and Gus that maybe they felt like they're a little bit disappointed maybe with the misses on Vernon and not being able to bring in Ayers, not bringing a veteran in as a pass rusher?
Well, Gus was disappointed on Vernon because from the coaching standpoint, as he started jokes, he just wanted to keep going and going on the price, but he understands that you know, Dave wasn't going to go past a certain number. You know, They both sort of took two different angles when I asked them that this week. Dave Caldwell said, well, you look at it, the Jaguars have three guys on third down that weren't with the team last year on the field, Fowler, Jackson, Marks. Okay, that's an okay argument. Gus said today there's still time to find guys, which to me means maybe he has a couple favorites in the draft already. He said after June 1st, guys are going to get cut. Maybe they can find a stopgap guy who can give them 12 plays a game. So it's sort of like, you know, Dave is sort of like, okay, this is the guys we have. It's probably going to be the main guys, whereas Gus is sort of still holding out hope that there may be somebody out there to take.
Ryan O'Halloran here with us live from the NFL owners meetings in Boca Raton. Ryan, yesterday Dave Caldwell spoke. I didn't think anything earth-shattering that we didn't know already, but I found it somewhat interesting when he was talking about what they might do in the draft, that they could draft today. They've got five guys they love for the number five pick. They're open to moving back, but they're also open to moving up, which I think is an unlikely scenario. Do you think there is a realistic chance, or how realistic of a chance is there, that they sit there at number five and say, you know what, we really love one of these defensive players significantly more than the others. Let's see if we can't work a reasonable deal to go get them.
Well, it would be out of character for sure. And, you know, if they moved from 5 to 2 or 5 to 3, are they willing to give up their second round pick and maybe a third and, you know, have their draft decimated by taking one guy? I would think that's unlikely.
If that's the cost, I would agree with you. If it's like a second and a fourth, I think that's way too much to pay for a one or two spot move.
Because if you look at them right now, I mean, they have a high second round pick. So if this draft is as deep as a lot of people think, that second round pick's going to have a ton of value. I mean, I think most likely they'll stay at five because, you know, that tends to be what Dave does. He just stands put in the first round. And then he, you know, moves around a little bit and being 2 and 3 of the draft.
Ryan, you mentioned all the other coaches in the room today. You sat with Gus Bradley for about half an hour, it sounded like, and then moved around a little bit. What did some of the other head coaches, if you had the opportunity to talk to them, say about maybe some of the free agents that are coming to Jacksonville, specifically guys like Kelvin Beachum?
Well, I asked Mike Tomlin about Kelvin, and he said that Beachum came light years in his development as a left tackle. Remember, he was a seventh-round draft pick, started a lot of games for them. But I said, you know, how does he make up for the lack of height? He said just an absolute great technician, a film junkie, and, you know, he knows how to use his hands, knows how to move around. So, you know, it sounded like they asked him to do a lot at left tackle. And, you know, one of the things I talked to Rex Ryan about, Chris Ivory, Rex looked at me and he goes, he's a hoss. And, you know, laughed and said, you know, physical runner, short yardage. So, you know, guys who have faced these players have praise for him.
By the way, happy birthday, Chris Ivory. He's 28 years old today. Ryan, final thought here for you. I guess coming up at the top of the hour, Shad Khan will speak here at the owners' meetings. What are you hoping to hear him address?
I got a bunch of things I want to ask. I mean, one thing that, you know, in terms of, okay, why are you so patient? Do other owners say, hey, this is how you should, you know, maybe I should have been more patient in earlier stages of my ownership career. So I wonder if he's growing into more of a leadership role with now this being his fifth annual meeting. Does he feel more comfortable speaking up in terms of league issues?
That's interesting, yeah, because he has kind of deferred on that, as you would expect a new guy coming into the mix. But I'll be curious to hear what he has to say about that, if he feels he is being more patient. I think he is being more patient than the average, but if he's getting kind of support from that from around the league as well from his fellow owners. All right, what do you have coming up? What will we be able to read from you and on both on the digital pages of the TU and on Twitter?
We're going to have tomorrow have a Shad Khan wrap-up. Some of Gus's thoughts on the new guys and, you know, take a lap around the league. And then on for Thursday, I'm going to tackle the pass rush issue. What do the Jaguars think they have and what do they still need to do?
All right, sounds good. Ryan O'Halloran on Twitter, at Ryan O'Halloran, and, of course, as the beat writer for your Jacksonville Jaguars in the Florida Times Union and a frequent co-host here on Jaguars Today. Ryan, enjoy the rest of your time down in Boca. Thanks for the time this morning, buddy.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, there he goes, Ryan O'Halloran, checking in from the owners' meetings down in Boca Raton with Shad Khan set to speak in about 10 minutes, and we'll follow Ryan's Twitter feed throughout the course of the second hour. If there's anything interesting that pops up that you need to know, we'll get that out there to you. Also of note, the University of Florida is holding their pro day today in anticipation of the 2016 NFL draft, and certainly some interesting prospects will be on display, including a guy, Tony, that we haven't talked a ton about as a possibility for the Jaguars, Vernon Hargraves, with the number 5 overall pick. I don't think it's completely out of the realm of possibility that he is the Jaguars' selection, and we got Stuart Weber over there from CBS 47 and Fox 30. Action Sports, and he will join us coming up at 11:15 as these guys have been going at it for a while now in Gainesville. Not only Hargraves, Jonathan Bullard, Count O'Neill, Antonio Morrison, some interesting players in this draft that the Gators are producing that, who knows, one or two may end up in a Jaguar uniform before it's all said and done. So we'll check in Gainesville, that coming up in about 25 minutes. He's Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. If you'd like to get in, 641-1010 is the number. It's also the 1010XL text line driven by Duval Ford number as well. You can text us at 641-1010. Coming up this date in football and the drive around the NFL, it's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history time here. It's a birthday time on this date in football history. The starting left tackle for the Chicago Bears 1985 Super Bowl championship squad was Jimbo Covert, born on this date in 1960. Covert turns 56 today, a two-time Pro Bowler, two-time first-team All-Pro. Also born on this date in 1969, happy 47th to Russell Maryland, former number one overall pick of the Dallas Cowboys, would go on to win three Super Bowls with the boys before finishing his career up with the Oakland Raiders. Joey Porter, a Super Bowl champion in his own right. He turns 39 today. Only 39 for Joey Porter. Thought he'd be a little bit older.
Only 39. Still an instigator, though.
Yeah, he is still an instigator. Four-time Pro Bowler, one-time first-team All-Pro. We mentioned earlier, happy 28th to one of the newest Jacksonville Jaguars, Chris Ivory, approaching the magical age of 30 for running back. So he's still got two full seasons in him at age 28 and 29 before he gets to that point. Made his first Pro Bowl with his first 1,000-yard season last year. Born in this state in 1989, Duval Doom's favorite, overrated player, J.J. Watt. He is a four-time Pro Bowler and a four-time first-team All-Pro in five seasons in the National Football League. I told you, I thought it was ironic, Tony, as I was looking through my birthday source, he and Reggie White were born on the same day. And I'm like,
oh, my
wow,
goodness.
Reggie White, defensive lineman. So I went to click to count up his Pro Bowls. It was some other Reggie White who played defensive tackle for the Chargers for a few years in the early 90s. Otherwise, that would have been quite coincidental. And also born on this exact same day in 1989. As for now, former Jaguar, although Dave Caldwell said the door still open to him possibly returning, Stefan Wisniewski turns 27 years old today, and that is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
The New York Jets and Ryan Fitzpatrick are still rumored to be far apart in their contract negotiations. The Jets want Fitz back. Team owner Woody Johnson made a point to say that they wanted him back yesterday at the owners' meetings, but the Jets are reportedly offering something in the neighborhood of $7 million a year. Fitzpatrick is looking for something around $14 million a year to go back to the New York Jets. As expected, the Chicago Bears and wide receiver Alshon Jeffrey are working on a long-term contract extension. Jeffrey was given the franchise tag designation by the Bears earlier this offseason. Free agent running back Alfred Morris has agreed to a two-year deal with the Dallas Cowboys. And Kansas City's Justin Houston had surgery in February to repair a torn ACL, or not a torn ACL. Chiefs trainer Rick Burkholder said that Houston was going in for arthroscopic knee surgery and that the ACL in his right knee was found to be intact but not functioning. Rehab is 6 to 12 months following the surgery. Houston appeared in both playoff games for the Chiefs despite dealing with an undisclosed knee injury, now could miss the entire 2016 campaign.
And I guess you could say this about many positions, but, Tony, when they say you can never have enough pass rush, right? Well, we got Justin Houston and Tom Bahali. Well, not so fast, right? One balky knee and
a weird story that they're going in for some other procedure and the ACL is just non-responsive.
I don't even understand why I guess this was done in February, so it wasn't that long of a wait.
Yeah.
Kansas City didn't make the postseason. He didn't play. It wasn't like months and months have gone by. It wasn't like the surgery happened this week. But I guess guys want a little bit of downtime. But I would think, man, get that thing done. Take a week, decompress, go get that thing done, get your rehab out of the way and be done with it, right? And you know, it's, I'm sure, an oddity that this would pop up. You're going in there for a scope and they find the ACL doesn't work. How do they find that out?
You know, I have no idea.
When they're scoping your knee, I assume you're knocked out, right? And they're in there. They're not doing some flexibility test or whatever. But Justin Houston, what do you have, 22 sacks 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Something like that. So he, along with J.J. Watt, and I guess Khalil Mack coming up based on the season he had last year, some of the most devastating pass rushers in the league right now going on. Also, some other stuff going on around the National Football League. We mentioned Alfred Morris goes to the Dallas Cowboys on a two-year deal. The Raiders, Tony, are continuing to at least consider Nevada as an ultimate destination, an ultimate landing spot, with most people feeling if they did go to Nevada, their eyes are set on playing in Las Vegas, right? And reading the commentary from Bart Hubick, former Florida Times Union reporter, now with the New York Post, he said that Giants co-owner John Mara said during the annual meetings that any move by any team to Nevada would be viewed, quote, by, quote, most owners as a, quote, non-starter, with the presence of casinos being the primary basis for the objection. Aren't there casinos in Atlantic City? Don't the Jets and the Giants both play in New Jersey?
We know there's one in New Orleans.
Right? And
we went to it.
Exactly. I mean, it's right down the block from the stinking stadium.
Yeah.
It's right there.
Yeah.
I mean, and so now you hear stories also coming out of the owners' meetings that New York, New Jersey, the combined New Meadowlands, whatever you want to call it, MetLife Stadium, wants it to host another Super Bowl. I'll say that the game went very smoothly. They had a terrific snowstorm the next morning.
Yeah.
That had that. I actually think it would have been cool to see the game played in those conditions. A lot of people don't want to see that happen. A lot of people feel like, well, we dodged a bullet. We made it happen for New York. It's never going to happen again. They're saying, why not? You know, you want, this is the biggest media event in sports, certainly in this country. It's the media capital of the world. We had a blast. I mean, I thought it was well done. We didn't have any issues with getting around, and there was snow on the ground when we were there. You know, they deal with that. They're used to that. It was worse being in Dallas with snow on the ground when they're not used to having that kind of situation. That's popped up in the past, but Chicago wants one. They all want one. Seattle wants one. And quite frankly, I don't see why you couldn't do it. I don't think football, I know some people think that football needs to be played in as pristine a conditions as possible, the level of the playing field, but it's just, I don't know, somewhat of the luck of the draw. Doesn't playing in a dome stadium at times give a quote-unquote finesse team an advantage?
Sure it does.
Right?
I mean, it would seem natural that it would. Right, the teams that like to play indoors or like to play fast would prefer that the conditions were pristine, and teams that are more defensive-minded or gutty or whatever you want to call it would prefer to play in not-so-pristine conditions. So why should it always be to the favor of the team that would enjoy the pristine conditions? I like that it moves around. I enjoyed the week up in New York and the storylines that were involved in that. And the NFL is in all these major cities across this country. The idea of just saying, no, we're not going to let New York or Chicago or some of these cities have a piece of the Super Bowl if they can handle it, and the structure is there. You don't even have to think about it. You don't have to blink about, can Chicago handle it from a hotel room standpoint? Are you kidding?
Of course.
Right. Like, right. It's not even a question with some of these cities that they're like, we're just not going to play there because it might be cold.
You have all the, right. That's the only thing is the weather, because you have all the venues you could possibly want. In fact, they, you know, if it weren't for weather considerations, it would be part of the regular rotation. If the Bears played in a dome stadium,
yeah,
you'd see it in Chicago every 5 years.
Yeah.
As Tyler points out, there are casinos in Atlantic City and New Jersey, but no sports gambling. And that's probably what they're referring to, but I don't understand that why. All right, so you're in Vegas. Is it you're afraid the players are going to go to the casino? Players already go to Vegas. I mean, Manziel goes to Vegas the night before the game, apparently, or at least he used to. I don't understand what does that mean there are going to be more people betting because they're the home team? Maybe, but is it impacting the outcome of your game? Are you suggesting that there's going to be a nefarious influence on the actual level of competition on the field? Or are you going to have players bought and paid for by the mob? I mean, what else are you talking about if you're concerned about gambling? Guess where else they have sports gambling? They have it in London, Tony. They're pretty eager to go to London. I don't know what they've got in China. I want to say if you want to do pretty much anything you want in China or Mexico, you can do these things.
My guess is that it's available to you.
I don't know. I may be wrong. Maybe they're really strict over there. It's like Singapore. They'll cane you. I don't know.
I'm not trying to
offend the Chinese. For goodness sakes, I have no idea. I've never been there.
It's naive in my mind to think that if you're worried about it because they'd be playing in Nevada, that's all just window dressing to me, because it's a small enough world now that it doesn't have to be in Nevada.
Right.
If they want to reach out and fix something, then they're doing it now. They don't need the team to be in Nevada to make that kind of thing happen. Maybe it's just an appearance thing where we don't want to be near Las Vegas because we're the National Football League and we don't want any questions about these kinds of things having to come our way. That's all that is they don't want to be associated with it for whatever reason, despite the fact that your sport is what it is because people gamble money on it constantly. That's why your sport is what it is, whether it be fantasy football or anything else that people are putting money on to determine to guess at the outcome of games or plays. That's why your sport is as popular as it is. It's why any sport is as popular as it is when it comes down to the bottom line.
Right. It's a huge, huge, huge driving factor, at least. There are plenty of people that don't gamble on sports.
Sure.
Love sports and go. But what takes it to the heights it's at now, it's a combination of all those factors. By the way, Doom tweeting in, I'm sure you've seen it. Well, now I know with the mention of J.J. Watt's birthday, what date to go back to once the time machine is complete. Did you see the story about the four sets of identical twins? I think it was on a New York City train that did a time machine prank. Like they had a guy that one of them goes in there. I didn't watch the video. I read the description, but it was like on Deadspin, and you can find it on places like that, where this guy was in there and he was like panhandling money. You know, he's sitting on the train or the subway, whatever it was, saying, "Hey, I need money. I'm trying to develop a time machine, and I need money. I need donations to keep my research going." And they go to the next stop, and his identical twin gets on the train, and he's like, "No, stop! Don't give him money. I'm him from the future." And he did this, and it screwed everything up. And they had four sets of twins in on this, and they done it. It's like an improv group that does this kind of thing. It sounds pretty funny. To me, actually. So Doom made me think of
that. To give you an idea, I just Googled it because I was curious about this.
Yes.
They estimate that there was $95 billion in the United States gambled on football in 2015.
Legally or illegally?
$93 billion of it. Illegally. So the
right.
$2 billion in Vegas is what they're really worried about their perception
right.
being affected by.
Right. But that's what it is. It's about perception, right? Because they can claim ignorance to any illegal gambling that goes on, no matter what the numbers are. How do you know what the estimate? I mean, how do they estimate that?
I have no idea.
Right? If you and I bet $100 or $0, how does anyone factor that in to the estimation?
Don't know.
Maybe they just poll people and extrapolate the data. I don't know. I'm a little... skeptical.
It was more of an article basically saying why is this still illegal?
Oh, I get it.
You know,
I'm just
people
curious
are
how they come up with
that
number,
rampantly.
Though.
Right.
All right. Coming up, we'll go to Gainesville next. Stuart Weber, CBS 47 and Fox 30 Action Sports will join us. Gator Pro Day going on today. Will any of these guys end up on your favorite team? We'll discuss next right here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
These are delicious!
On 1010XL, Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
Man, we try to avoid that around here, Tony, don't we? Oh, goodness. Killing me, Tyler. But it's appropriate in this instance. It is Pro Day in Gainesville. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Let's take you over to Gainesville. Stuart Weber, CBS 47 and Fox 30 Action Sports joins us here from the University of Florida campus. What's up, Stu? How are you, buddy?
Oh, that music is just so sweet to my ears. I love it.
That's for you, bud. I hope you enjoy
Thank
that.
You so much.
We appreciate the time. We figured we'd introduce you properly. All right. Give us the lowdown. First of all, with the owners' meetings going on, you have a lot of coaches and GMs down in Boca. What kind of presence have the various NFL teams sent to Gainesville? Is it a big crowd?
Well, this is the thing. Every year when we come here, we see at least Mike Tomlin. Usually you'll see Belichick. And right now I don't see a single head coach. Obviously, they all had the media availability this morning down in Boca. And apparently all 32 teams are represented. We just have no idea who any of their representatives are because the bigwigs are in South Florida.
No doubt about it. With the owners' meetings going on, and like you said, everybody was talking to the media this morning. Heck, even Bill Belichick had to speak for a couple minutes this morning in his ridiculous-looking hoodie down there at their owners' meetings. Obviously, all eyes from a Jaguars perspective, potentially on Vernon Hargraves, really the name that would potentially be called by the Jags in the first round if anybody down there would be at number five. Is this your first chance to get a look at Vernon Hargraves in person? How impressive is he?
I've seen him in obviously plenty of games in person. This is, of course, a completely different atmosphere. These pro days, they're controlled environments, no more controlled than this year as they're in the indoor practice facility for the first time, which, by the way, it's beautiful. I've never been in here, and it's very nice having this air conditioning. It's not terrible. Not that it's hot outside. But with Vernon and a lot of the higher-end guys, they're going to rest on what they did in the combine. I know he didn't run the 40. He's got a lot of great numbers that he can kind of sit on. And we'll see how he does in the position drills, which they're actually warming up for right now as we speak.
What about Hargraves in terms of the Jaguars' plans, Stu? I think, you know, a lot of people have narrowed their focus down to Jalen Ramsey, Miles Jack, Joey Bosa, in whatever order you like them. There are certainly scenarios where no quarterbacks go early. The Jags are sitting there without that, you know, regular cast of characters available to them. Is Hargraves a consideration, you know, with the Mukamara signing, but only signing here on a one-year deal?
If you ask me, I don't think so. I think they go in a different direction. I think, like you said, he kind of falls a little later in that top 10 than they would at number 5 for the Jaguars. And I know a lot of the teams that are picking later on, I've seen on Twitter, apparently are very interested in what Hargraves is doing, the teams at 9, 10, that kind of area there. As for the Jags, I don't think they go that direction, if you're asking me.
I know Hargraves showed up a little bit late this morning based on what I'm seeing on Twitter. Not sure exactly what the reason for that is. Like you said, he's only going through the positional drills. One of the other guys of note, Jonathan Bullard, who may be expected to go in the late first round but could potentially be there for the Jags at the top of the second round. What kind of conversation is there around that guy right now?
Yeah, as you say that, actually all eyes are on Bullard right now. They're actually running the defensive line drills. Many of the drills we get to see at the Florida Blue practice fields for our Jaguars defensive line where, you know, they're running through the tackling dummies and all that. So everybody's actually watching him right now, and you can tell there's a lot of people very, very focused on what he's doing with each and every move. And I wouldn't be surprised if maybe like you said, some of the Jags representatives are taking a look as well and checking out what he can do.
So who are some of the guys then that are drawing the oohs and ahs that from what you could tell? As you said, that if you're a high-profile guy and you've done well at the combine, you may be resting on your laurels for the most part today. So among the guys getting an opportunity to participate, a guy like Brian Poole, who couldn't go to the combine.
That's exactly who I was going to say.
Is that right? Tell us who's having a good day.
Yeah, Brian Poole, I mean, in the 40, he ran in the 4.5s. And like you said, there's a guy who didn't get a chance to go to Indy, didn't get that invite to the combine, and if you're a player, you got to take that as a bit of a slight and you know, use that as motivation when you're out here on your own throw day and you still have all those scouts watching you. So, yeah, Brian Poole, definitely a guy. And then you have a guy like Alex McAllister, the defensive lineman, who maybe didn't quite leave the program on the best terms as far as his playing days were done, but he's out here running the defensive line drills as well. So I wouldn't be surprised to see McAllister, you know, get some buzz as well.
Speaking of not leaving the program on the best terms, DeMarcus Robinson working out down there. And some people have said that he is a first-round talent with kind of, you know, that two-cent brain kind of thing with a guy like DeMarcus Robinson. What does he look like today? I know he's a very athletic guy.
Yeah, and that's exactly what he's looked like, is an athletic guy, a guy who obviously can run fast, a guy who obviously can catch the ball in practice. It's just a matter of in the games, and we saw that by watching Florida this year. It was really, or not this year, the entire time he was in Gainesville, it was just kind of that untapped potential. You'd see the glimmers, you'd see the chance, and you have to wonder if there's an NFL team that says, hey, I think we can get that out of him and able to get that talent to shine on a consistent basis.
Stuart Weber, CBS 47 and Fox 30 over in Gainesville for the Florida Pro Day today, joining us on Jaguars Today this morning. If you had to pick a Gator that's working out today or is present today at the Pro Day, Stu, that was the most likely one to end up with the Jaguars, or you think it would be a good fit maybe in a later round with the Jags if they don't take one at number 5, who would that player be?
That's an interesting question. Like I said, I like McAllister. I know that we're constantly looking for those edge rushers, and he's a guy who can get to the quarterback. He's not as big as maybe you'd expect for a defensive lineman. He's tall and lanky, and that's one of those things that, you know, it's an intangible when you're on that defensive line and finding your way past offensive linemen, and you can definitely take him in the later rounds, and who knows what the future holds for him.
Kelvin Taylor obviously decided to come out a year early, could have gone back to school for one more year, decided he was going to go into the draft. A lot of people have questioned whether that was the right decision for him, whether he would have benefited from another year down there in Gainesville. Getting a look at him down there at the workout today as well, where do you think his prospects are in the NFL draft?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. He's actually standing about 10 yards away from me having a chat with Cade Bell, funny enough, who's serving as a quarterback here for the Pro Day. About 5 JU Dolphins and Kerwin Bell, the former head coach, are all out here as well. But getting back to Kelvin Taylor, yeah, I mean, he's a guy who can maybe find that niche in the NFL and find that spot. He's not going to go high in the draft, obviously, but he's one of those guys who wants to go out there and prove it. And could he have used an extra year in Gainesville? I think it probably would have helped him. But that's kind of the way of the world right now, especially with a position like running backs. He's actually, funny enough, talking to Matt Jones now, the former Gator running back who went last year to the Redskins and, you know, actually had a pretty good season for a guy that kind of flew under the radar.
Oh, you're right about that. I think he surprised people going into the third round. And you look at their depth chart right now, he's at the top of it in Washington. So just because you don't go in the first couple rounds doesn't mean you can't have an impact. Stu, what are you hearing about the buzz about Antonio Morrison, Keanu Neal?
Yeah, Antonio Morrison obviously wasn't able to participate at the combine, had that late illness that kind of scratched him. As far as his 40 goes, wasn't particularly quick. I know he was hovering right around the five number. I didn't get a chance to see his final numbers, but yeah, he's a guy who really, I don't know if this is where his element is. I feel like his element is on a game day, maybe like the fifth week of the year where you got guys who are nicked up. He's a guy who's going to go. He's a guy who's going to go no matter what kind of injuries he's working through. And you really don't have to worry about that with him. He's going to give you his all.
What is the schedule for down there? I know you said it sounds like they're starting some of the individual workouts right now, position drills with Bullard being on the field. When will VH3 be on the field today?
I think that all has to do with the national networks who are televising the entire thing, and preventing us from getting a chance to really see it because of where we're standing with our cameras. Not that I'm complaining about that or anything. But we'll see. I know they're going through the individual drills right now, and I'm sure Vernon will be up shortly. I know that they're over there warming up right now and catching some balls and getting ready to go. So I'd imagine it has to be pretty soon. Then we'll get some interviews with them and show that to you tonight on CBS 47 and Fox 30.
All right, Stu, we'll cut you loose here in a sec, but just a final thought. JU doesn't do a pro day, but they do at the University of Florida allow the JU Dolphin football players to come over, some of them, and participate, as well as anybody from the JU program caught your eye or caught the eye of anybody that you've seen watching some of the workouts today.
Yeah, having some conversations with some of my fellow media members. I mean, Andy Jones is the standout guy, wide receiver Andy Jones. Whether he is a late round pick or a preferred free agent, we'll see. But a guy with that potential and the physical tools to maybe make an impact on an NFL team. So it really is cool that the JU guys get a chance to come down here and participate in these events and really get that exposure in front of all these NFL teams. And I'm interested to see if that continues now that Kerwin's over at Valdosta State. Maybe we'll see some of those players here next year instead.
That's a good point there. All right, Stuart Weber from CBS 47 and Fox 30 here with us, wrapping up coverage from the Florida Pro Day over in Gainesville. You can follow Stu on Twitter at Stuart A.S. Jax for Action Sports. Of course, STUARTASJAX, if you don't know how to spell it yourself. Stuart A.S. Jax. Stu, we appreciate the time, man. Enjoy the rest of the time over there in Gainesville. We'll see you when you get back to Jacksonville.
Yeah, I'm not quite able to go in the wave pool like Martineau down in Boca, but I'll do it.
All right, report from whatever body of water you can find, my man. Thank you, Stu. We'll see you, buddy. There he goes. Stuart Weber, Action Sports Jax with CBS 47 and Fox 30 on the ground in Gainesville. Tony, I wouldn't say dismissive, just seems like he doesn't think it's that much of a possibility to get Hargraves, or that they'd want Hargraves with the number five pick. I think there are some good corners that are going to be available in round two in this draft and beyond, based on what the scouts say. Anyway, it does seem like if you've got an opportunity to get a bigger body, right, that can impact you, whether that's a D lineman a la Bosa or a Buckner, or maybe there's somebody else. The diminishing returns sometimes at those positions the further you go in the draft. We've seen corners shine from a variety of spots in the draft. But if you feel like the guy is, a future Pro Bowler, I think you got to go for as much of a sure thing as you can at number five. And again, this is under a scenario where we've hypothetically thrown out where no quarterbacks go in the top four picks. Yeah. And, some of the guys that are most frequently discussed for the Jags are off the board.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a nightmare scenario right now, at least from our perspective. Look, we don't know how Dave Caldwell and the guys in this building feel about that, right? They could be perfectly fine. They may have, if they assume somebody that's non-defensive goes off the board, whether it be Tunsil or anybody else, they may have four guys they love. We don't know if they're comfortable, if they're put in that kind of situation to just make a pick at five and feel good about the player that they're getting. I don't know. Is DeForest Buckner a fit here in Jacksonville?
Right.
They may feel fine about that.
Sure.
Like, if that's the choice that they have to make, they may feel fine about it. I think from the outside looking in, we're all going, well, what happens if Buckner's the best guy available? Is that really the guy they want to go get if they have Audric and Alualu and Malik Jackson and Derek Marks? Are they just going to add a fifth body in that spot and try to figure out how to put him on the field? Well, they may be comfortable with that, and we're just not from the outside because of how much everybody in town wants pass rush.
Right.
They want to improve that defense, and I'm with everybody else that's looking at it saying, how much does Buckner help if that's the guy that they wind up drafting there at number five? But maybe he is the right guy, too. We don't know. We just don't know at this point.
All right. You know what? When we come back, we've got a nice giveaway for you for an event coming up a week from Tuesday. If you're a Florida or Florida State fan, you probably know what that event is. We got baseball coming to the baseball grounds in Jacksonville. Easy there, Devitt. All right. When we return in a moment, we'll give you a chance to score a pair of tickets to Florida, Florida State, taking on each other in college baseball a week from today at the baseball grounds of Jacksonville. That's coming up along with the fan feedback question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships, asking you today, among the free agents that they've signed in the 2016 class, which one will have the biggest on-field impact for the Jaguars this season? Coming up, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jaguars Today, live at EverBank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
I would think both will. I mean, that's the way the draft tends to play out. You know, again, I'm not a good speculator, but we just look at history. You know, I think Wentz and Goff will end up going in the top five. I really do.
That's Greg Cosell. He was on this morning, a noted film watcher of the NFL and college prospects, the executive producer of NFL Matchup, senior producer of NFL Films for 36 years. He was on with Jeff Prosser this morning on the drill here on 1010XL, and he was talking about, again, he doesn't like to speculate. He just likes to report what his eyes see. Here's the tape. Here's how I see this prospect. But when asked if he thinks more than one quarterback can go in the top five, Tony made it sound like he thinks it's likely that more than one quarterback will go, and then therefore in the first four picks, which would be ideal for the Jacksonville Jaguars to get a couple of quarterbacks. Now, one of two things, I guess, possibly. If you don't really love who you're going to get, you could have a scenario where maybe you love one of these three guys, right, that we're talking so much about.
Yeah.
Ramsey, Jack, and Bosa, right? And maybe it's Jack. Let's just say it's Jack. And let's say Jack's gone, right? He's the one gone out of that mix. Two quarterbacks in Tunsil. Maybe you like Ramsey, but you don't love him because you've got Tashaun Gibson. And I understand he can play corner, but maybe they don't like him as a corner. We don't know. Different scenario. So you could make an argument that one of the ideal scenarios is no quarterbacks go, and therefore you're sitting there at five with the opportunity for someone to trade up ahead of San Francisco, at least with the seventh pick, and grab a quarterback in that spot. And a lot of people, you know, you could make the argument that they would make the move with Baltimore at six, but whatever the case. But in this, Greg Cosell thinks the scenario will play out that ultimately, as we get closer to the draft, the value of quarterbacks will push Goff and Wentz, or push or keep them near the top of the board, to the point where no matter what happens, you're going to see a couple of those guys go in the top four. And I still think, there are many plausible ways this could benefit the Jags, but that to me is the best, most likely scenario that would benefit them the most.
Oh, yeah. The more offensive players that go in the top five, the better. For the Jacksonville Jaguars, considering that their focus is still going to be on the defensive side of the ball. And there may be one guy they love, and all the better if three of the top four are offensive players, because then the odds of getting the one guy you love are that much higher than they would have been if those guys weren't coming off the board at that point. So, yeah, give me Tunsil and two quarterbacks and Dallas deciding Ezekiel Elliott's the guy. Give me that all day long, because then the Jags are probably getting their favorite guy in this entire draft, like they felt like they did last year when Dante Fowler fell to him, when they basically had, in their mind, the first pick of the draft, because one and two were quarterbacks.
Right, they didn't need a quarterback.
Yeah, so they got the pick. Their pick of the litter last year, they decided Dante Fowler Jr. was the guy. Hopefully it falls that way. Five, it's a lot more difficult to figure out a way that it's going to fall that way for you, but it would be sweet if it did.
We'll get to the fan feedback spotlight here momentarily. One more thought on all that. It looks like the RG3 thing to Cleveland may have some legs, right? That it's not. At first, there was some speculation, well, maybe they're talking up this visit to knock down Colin Kaepernick's asking price if they traded for him on a renegotiated contract. Colin Kaepernick's probably in a pretty good spot right now. He could sit there and get $12 million bucks from the 49ers this year, or they can cut him loose, and he's going to have suitors. Even if RG3 ends up in Cleveland, he'll have someone that's willing to take a chance on him in this offseason. But and it does seem like, according to the reporting, is that along with heating up interest in RG3, their interest is cooling in Kaepernick. I think the RG3 signing keeps it more likely, still very likely, that they go out and draft a quarterback with the number two pick. I think it's a little bit different with Kaepernick because he hasn't had the injury history of RG3. And you hear about RG3, as Greg Cosell said this morning, he thinks he needs to be broken down fundamentally and built completely back up again. That's a daunting process that is not often successful in the National Football League.
No, and it makes it sound more like a backup quarterback. To me, if you can find another guy that can be the starter, and Colin Kaepernick feels like a guy that in some systems around the league, he's still athletic enough to do what he did in San Francisco. It may not fit with what they want to do going forward, but he's still athletic enough to do what he did as a quarterback. Is he a good enough passer from the pocket? No. And that's why Blaine Gabbert's been playing football for the last half of the season in San Francisco. And it's why, despite the fact that Chip Kelly's coming in and there's all kinds of intrigue about what it would look like with Colin Kaepernick in a Chip Kelly-led offense, apparently San Francisco's not interested in seeing what it looks like with Colin Kaepernick.
Not enthusiastically Chip Kelly. Interested,
right.
Anyway.
Which is a little bit interesting with that guy. But look, RG3, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, I think, that basically some of the reports coming out about him are that he can't move. He can't run
right
the way he used to. After the major knee injury, he breaks his ankle against the Jaguars a couple seasons ago. Can he still be a mobile quarterback in this league? I don't know. And that was really what made him such a threat from the quarterback position. If he can't do that, then what is he? Is he a good enough pocket passer that you feel good about putting him in there? He's certainly not. He's already shown he's not big enough to sustain it. He can't physically handle the kind of hits that you have to take to be a starting quarterback.
Not if he doesn't know how to protect himself better. That's part of it, too. And he's been terrible at protecting himself in and out of the pocket.
Yeah. I mean, so you got, like, if you're bringing in RG3, that's not your answer.
No, I agree with you.
You
got to
have something else.
It's, if you're bringing in RG3 and you're Cleveland, I don't think that changes their draft plans at all. It's just another potential piece to the mix. You let him compete, and that's fine. And maybe in the short term, having some NFL experience, he'd be ready over a guy, say, like Carson Wentz, who went to North Dakota State. We've got tickets, a pair of them, to give away, and we'll do that here momentarily to Florida State. So hang on if you're getting ready to call in on that. Let's get Bobby on the south side in quickly before we get to the fan feedback spotlight. What's up, Bobby? How are you?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, man.
Hey, I was calling, man, because about the impact that I think the player will have for the Jags next season out of free agency. And I'm pretty high on Taj Gibson, man. That guy there is like a ball hog. I mean, he got a nose for what a ball is going to be, man. And I think that guy there can have a big impact. That guy, he's not a real big hitter as a safety. But, I mean, I could see this guy comparing this guy to like an Ed Reed type guy, man. I mean, I think he's going to make a huge impact for the Jags next year. This season
I hope so.
Coming up.
Yeah, I think, and we'll get to the, thank you, Bobby. We'll get to the other votes we've had on that here momentarily. But, look, he fills, like you said, a gaping position of need that they've got, has had success at a Pro Bowl level in this league. Fits the age profile, Tony, and could not only, you know, plug that hole, but the trickle effect of making everybody else in the secondary that much better because they've got somebody who truly has their back, who knows what they're doing back there, puts him high on the list of candidates as the most impactful free agent. We've got a pair of tickets to the Florida State Florida baseball game next Tuesday, March 29th, at the baseball grounds at Jacksonville. If you'd like them, all you have to do is be caller number 4 right now at 641-1010, 641-1010. And you will have those tickets, again, it's a week from tonight at the baseball grounds at Jacksonville. So call Tyler. If you're the fourth caller, he will hook you up with those tickets. Fan feedback question of the day asking you today, which Jaguar 2016 free agent signing will have the biggest impact on the team this season and why? What do we get, Tone?
From Irish Jaguar to Sean Gibson, free safety has been a train wreck since Dave and Gus got here. From Eric, Brad Nortman, he's a weapon 2.0. Seriously, it had better be Jackson. A lot of money for him. From Made by Tim Gibson. He should allow the defense more ability to cheat in press and in the box. From Nick, hopefully Malik Jackson, since you gave him straight cash. Hashtag Jack Attack. From Daniel, Gibson, because they added a leader to the secondary helping Sip and Sample. From Black Dog Express, Malik Jackson's impact will affect the play of Gibson and the entire defense. I see three and outs and turnovers. Hashtag top five defense. From Union Jack's Joe, gotta be Gibson. Gives us something we've needed and not had since Gus got here. From Joey Gibson, more important because of Gus's scheme. And from Isaiah to Sean Gibson, he is going to be lead the team in picks. So a lot of Tashaun there.
Yeah, there's a lot of Tashaun. Here's a few on Facebook of different varieties here. Chad Cox went with Gibson as well, with his range and coverage ability should allow the Jags D to play single high safety with cover three concepts. He's breaking it down. Which was the defense Gus Bradley coached in Seattle. Now that they have playmakers on the defensive line with added depth, they will be formidable. Let's hope that's the case on the defensive line. Speaking of that, Damon went with Malik Jackson because he's a disruptor and will force a quarterback off their spot. Steve Muncy maybe gave the only vote we saw to Chris Ivory. He said ball control and big play potential. As you heard Ryan O'Halloran this morning here on Jaguars Today, when Gus Bradley was asked this morning about Chris Ivory, his face kind of lit up a little bit, and also Rex Ryan glowingly talking about Chris Ivory as a football player, his former coach with the New York Jets. A couple of others. I don't think these are as serious of votes. Tony Adrian said Brad Nortman, something, 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 weapon. And then Tommy Blair went off the board and went with Osweiler because we get to beat up on that turd of a quarterback for two wins this year. Let's hope that's the case. I don't think he's any worse than the turd of a quarterback that they had last year. And there wasn't a whole lot of beating up of the Texans going on. So let's hope that's the case. They certainly think they've upgraded.
Sure.
At the position as opposed to anything else. What are you hoping to I haven't really followed along with the Jag Twitter during the last hour. Anything that Shad Khan could say that would be noteworthy to you today or you'd like to hear him comment on?
I haven't seen much coming out of it. I know he started speaking a while ago. I saw Ryan O'Halloran tweeted that no set date for start of practice facility construction yet. Said didn't know if it would be available at all in 2016, but haven't seen much else. I don't know that Shad Khan's going to say much of note today. I think because of the way this offseason has worked and because we heard from him at basically the end of the season with the vote of confidence for Bradley and Caldwell, that was kind of the questions that would be getting thrown at him anyway, and we've heard him answer that already. And with the Jaguars state of the franchise that they did a little while ago, you heard from him there too as far as what they're planning to do as far as the upgrades in the stadium and the practice facility and all these different things that they have going on. So we've heard from Shad talking about what I think you would hear him talking about today. Not a whole lot has changed from that perspective.
Right, and I wouldn't be surprised though if some of that gets repeated from the national media anyway to follow it on a day-to-day basis. But we'll have plenty on what Shad Khan did have to say throughout the course of the afternoon here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM, and of course tomorrow morning as well here on Jaguars Today. So thanks today to Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union for checking in. Stuart Weber of CBS 47 and Fox 30 in Gainesville with the University of Florida Pro Day going on as we speak. And all of you out there in Radio Land for listening, texting, tweeting, posting, and calling and the like. Mike Dempsey for Fat Tony. Thanks to Joe Fortunato and Tyler Devitt as well today. Stick around. XL Primetime coming up in moments. That does it for Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.